Let me get us started. This is the third talk in the series on the heart of the matter from Matthew's Gospel. And we're on the issue of keeping up appearances. Hopefully you got an outline when you came in or on your seat. That'll be useful to you. We're going to refer to from Matthew's biography about Jesus. And I'm going to speak. Quite a short talk today. Probably just under 20 minutes. So lots of time for question and answer. Hopefully not too much time. Okay. Well, why was Kevin Rudd deposed? I mean, I know he's been resurrected, so maybe the word deposed doesn't quite work. I know he's been undeposed, but why was he deposed? Why was there a bloodless coup? Well, the simple answer is that it appeared that Kevin Rudd, leading the Labour Party, would lose the next election. This is the image from, I think, was it the Herald, from the Herald Nielsen poll on May. I think it was the 10th of May. They polled 1,400 people, and there was a 14% drop in Rudd's approval rating. So the power brokers, the MPs and others, looked at what the poll said. In other words, they looked at what 1,400 random people thought and made their decision on what 1,400 random people thought. The power brokers thought, the people don't like him, so we don't like him. He's got to go. Now, at one level, what are you going to do? It's an election, right? And we know that elections are as much about the candidate's popularity and their likability as it is about the principles and the policies. You know, my proof for that statement is that Julia Rudd appearing in Woman's Day with, you know, you saw that the hair went from kind of a, yeah, not unstylish, to just before the election announcement, suddenly a new vibrant red and a new style, and then a Woman's Day spread. You know, it's about as popularity as much about principles. So that's elections. But the question I think it raises for us is, why do we do things? And whose approval are we seeking? From the banal to, you know, what clothes do we wear? I mean, you know, I know I look good in this suit, but why am I wearing a suit in the city? I mean, I'd much prefer to wear jeans. And yet, other people expect, hope, if I'm in a public thing, that I should wear a suit. So that's a banal example, but in everything, why do we do the things we do and whose approval are we seeking? In other words, what matters to us most? And is what matters to us most, does it matter because it matters to other people? Well, when Jesus looks at this kind of topic, he does so from a belief in God. Who's revealed in the Old Testament. And so I'm going to read now most of what's printed out in your outline. You can follow along. And we'll kind of pick up on Jesus kind of talking about appearances and where you stand in the appearances chain. Jesus says this, be careful. It's actually stronger than that. It says, beware not to do your acts of righteousness, so the good things that you do, giving money to the poor or looking after the needy, before men, to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues or on the streets, to be honored by men. I tell you the truth, they have received their reward in full. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. Then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. And when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by men. I tell you the truth, they have received their reward in full. But when you pray, go into your room, close the door, and pray to your Father who is unseen. Then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. And when you pray, do not keep on babbling like pagans, for they think they will be heard because of their many words. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask him. This then is how you should pray. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread. Forgive us our debts as we have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. For if you forgive men when they sin against you, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive men their sins, your Father will not forgive your sins. When you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show men they are fasting. I tell you the truth, they have received their reward in full. But when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face, so that it will not be obvious to men that you are fasting, but only to your Father who is unseen, and your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. Now, we're not going to concentrate on the bit where Jesus talks about how to pray. We're mainly going to focus on his critique of three things, which is the way in which people give to the poor, the way in which they pray, in the sense of before others, and when they fast, which is, you know, going without food, and often going without other things as well. And the thing that Jesus is kind of critiquing is the fact that image is everything. In the ancient Jewish world, 2,000 years ago, the religion was, it was a theocracy. So God was at the heart of the nation, such that he was even part of the politics of the place. And so acts of righteousness, religious acts like giving to the poor, praying and fasting, were kind of what everyone did. They were an accepted part of the society. The equivalent might be Melbourne Cup Day in Australia. Everyone gambles on Melbourne Cup Day, even if it's just the, what do you call that thing again? The office sweep. Yeah, even if it's just the office sweeps. You know, it's like we're a gambocracy. We're like, it's that, that's fundamental to us, right? Well, you know, so it is. The religion acts a part of it. And each of these things that Jesus critiques, giving to the poor, praying, fasting, the pattern is the same. He says, be careful to not do this before men. So you can see it, sentence one. And the reason is, see it there, it's the little phrase, it's a little purpose phrase, to be seen by them, or in order to be seen by them. If you do, you'll receive no reward from your Father in heaven. You see it in sentence five. And when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues, the religious buildings, and on the street corners, in order to be seen by men. Sentence 16, when you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces. You know, they let them get, they don't wash them. To show, or it's in order to show men they're fasting. So he's not actually saying, don't give money to the poor. Don't pray and don't fast, but don't do it with the purpose of being seen, because that's what these people are doing. And the pattern is the same. See, the reason they're doing it is for popularity with men. Poor, praying, fasting, they're all good things, but they're all doing it to be popular before men. See, why are they doing these religious things? Because it matters to their peers. That's why they're doing them. Not because it's the right thing to do, not because it pleases God, but because it appears to be the right thing. Image is everything. Now, Jesus says there is a reward for doing it. Look at sentence 2. Before men to be seen by them, if you... sentence 1. If you do... So he's saying this to his followers. You will have no reward from your Father in heaven. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets. Hypocrites do. I tell you the truth, they have received their reward in full. There is a reward. The reward is being seen by others. So when you do it, Jesus is saying, before other people in order to impress them, you do get a benefit from it. You're rewarded. Now, the funny thing is, I think in our society, this is perfect for us. That reward's perfect for us. Jesus says, if you do these things to be noticed by men, you will be noticed by men and you'll get the reward of being noticed by men. And you know what we'd say? Great! That's exactly what I wanted. It's achieved my goal. If you look just the way our society works. If you look at, this is the Queensland Theatre Company for their production last year called God of Carnage. A fun play, worth seeing if you get the chance. And up the back, you can guess what's up the back, right? You can tell me, can't you? The list of all the people who've donated to the Queensland Theatre Company. Now, the people that you really know who love theatre on this list are the person who gave $10,000, whose name is Anonymous. Now, everyone else on this list might love the Queensland Theatre Company, but you could never tell, right? Because as soon as their name is up here, they're doing it to have their name up in lights. Number 2, Anonymous, gave $500. And there's 14 anonymous people who gave $100. And there's a whole bunch of other people. Now, I don't know these people, which is a really good thing. I'm not, if you're one of them, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be, you know... It's great that if you love the theatre company, I like the theatre, it's good. But call me cynical, but let me ask you the question this way. Would Bundaberg Rum be that interested in Australian rugby if they couldn't, at every commercial break, have the phrase proudly sponsored by Bundaberg Rum inserted? What do you think? Do you think if they weren't allowed to have their advertising, they would actually give any money to rugby union? Of course not. But see, it just proves my point. That's the reward of men in some senses. I mean, this isn't a good thing, this is just purely a business thing. But they're getting their reward, which is that people see their product, associate it with fit young men, and then you drink it and you become an unfit young man and achieve the opposite, but they've sold their product. Now, you're kind of thinking, but Glenn, this is just the way society works. That's just the way the world works. I mean, you're out of step with the world if you're critiquing it. Exactly. That is my point. And I think that's Jesus' point. Jesus is pointing out that our default position is to do things because they benefit us directly. Our default position is for benefit. That's our default position. See, prayer in the ancient Jewish world, prayer, caring for the poor and fasting were what God had commanded. So people did it because they lived in this Jewish nation. It was a Jewish nation. People did it because that's what God had commanded. But Jesus is driving at, why are you doing it? Why are you doing it? Are you doing it because it mattered to God? Or are you a hypocrite? You're doing the things that God commanded to be seen by men. And can you hear the very contradiction in that idea? And that's what he says. He says, sentence two. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets. I don't think they actually did announce it with trumpets. I think it's a metaphor. As the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets. So this takes us to the next point, above peer pressure. See, if we want to live outside peer pressure, if we want to do what is right, then we actually need a higher principle. A higher principle than just what everyone else thinks. Because that's what we're talking about here. Why do we do what we do? Is it just because what everyone else thinks? Why do we buy Bundaberg rum? Why do we choose the car that we choose? Is it just because of what everyone thinks? Look at Jesus' argument, sentence 5. When you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in synagogues, blah, blah, blah. I've said that. Sentence 6. But when you pray, go into your room. And now, it actually is, go into the hidden place, close the door, and pray to your Father who is unseen. So instead of doing it to be seen, go into a hidden place where you are unseen, pray to your Father who is unseen, and then look, then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. See, when you go to where is unseen, you're praying out of right motives. Jesus is saying, it's the same pattern in each of them. You can see it in the same, I won't go through each one, but you can say it in giving things to the poor, praying or fasting. It's all about not doing it in order to not be seen, but that's the way you can test your motives. Then the unseen Father, it's really interesting. The unseen Father, who no one sees, but who does see, will reward you. See, the issue is, when it comes to doing things, is it's not doing them for nothing. Did you notice that? See, it's about rewards, but rewards from who? Or should that be whom? Yeah. So, rewards from whom? Did you notice that? See, there's rewards in both cases. Sentence 1, be careful not to do your righteous acts before men to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father. Down it keeps going. Sentence 2, right at the end, I tell you the truth, they have received their reward in full. So there's a reward for doing it before men. You do actually get a reward. Sentence 4, do it so that your giving may be in secret, then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. So there's rewards available. It's not just pure principle. It's actually done for benefit in some senses. But the options are, do you want to be rewarded by men or women or people, or do you want your reward from God? The question is, whose reward matters to you? The reward of people or the reward of God? Now, you might not believe in a creator, but just think about it this way. I mean, if there was a creator God who made all of this universe with all of its wonder and majesty and incredible infinite space and all the intricacy of, you know, what the life on Earth and all the kind of amazing complexity, if there was a creator God who made people to know him and please him and be loved by him, Jesus is saying, and it's kind of obvious, what if there is that creator God, why would you do things to receive the praise and honor and glory of another creature made by God when the praise of the Creator, the reward of the Creator is available? He's kind of saying, just by definition, he's asking, isn't that crazy? If you, why would you look to, you know, have the reward of another creature who's just like you when you could have a reward from the Creator of all creatures? Jesus' assumption is that it would be crazy to put the reward of people before the reward of God. I think the tone of this is, you know, when you see those movies about nerds, and what they do is they, a group of nerds at university or whatever, they have some great success in something, and they're all super excited about their success. And when you're watching the film, both you and the other characters who aren't nerds look at their success, and you look at it and you go, the only people who think that whatever they've done is successful are the nerds themselves. And it kind of makes you kind of sympathetic towards them and depressed for them at the same time, because you kind of think, no one else thinks what they've done is a big deal. Jesus is kind of moving us into that category, saying, if you do what pleases other people, what? God, no one thinks that's... Why would you want... That's a bit pathetic, isn't it? But we still do it. I do it. Why do we do it? I think the difference is between the seen versus the unseen. See, we know what we get when we get praise from men or women. Whether the rewards are small or great, we know what they are. So they're tangible. It might be praise in the office. It might be having lots of friends. It might be just not being thought of as an idiot. But it's because the rewards are seen. And so we compare them to the unseen reward from God, which we don't know exactly how that works or what that looks like. And so we go for the seen every time. So you might be sitting there thinking, well, hang on, of course, that's obvious. Because we can't see God. I mean, wouldn't it be nice if we could see God and be confident of his reward? Well, that's probably the challenge here. The Bible actually says God has made himself seen in the most incredible way. Listen to this language. This is a quote from Jesus talking to one of his disciples. Philip said, as in John chapter 14, one of the other biographies about Jesus, Philip said, Lord, or Master, show us the Father and that will be enough for us. Listen to Jesus' words here. Jesus answered, don't you know me, Philip, even after I have been among you such a long time? Anyone who has seen me has seen the Father, that is God in heaven. How can you say, show us the Father, God in heaven? Jesus saying, yes, you can see God because you've seen me. But more than just can God be seen, his reward has been demonstrated. Can you trust that he will reward? Because this passage talks about reward in the future. Did you notice that it's in the future? End of sentence 4. Then your Father who sees what is done in secret, future, will reward you. End of sentence 6. Then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. Same at the end of 18. Then your Father who does something in secret will reward you. It's all future. It might start to unfold then and there. Well, see, the resurrection is proof of the reward to come. See, you can only assess that resurrection historically, not scientifically. If you want to kind of chase down the resurrection, here's a really big, meaty book of about 400 or 500 pages called The Resurrection of the Son of God. What's interesting about this is one of the popular reasons to overturn the resurrection is that people who are writing against the Bible and writing against the resurrection are saying, look, there's actually lots of myths circulating at the time that people came back from the dead and became rulers. And so what happened is the disciples had their leader die, Jesus died, and then they didn't want to give up following him. So what they did is they latched onto these myths that everyone kind of accepted in the ancient world and then kind of incorporated them into their biography about Jesus. That's what lots of people who are writing against the Bible would kind of argue about the resurrection. What N.T. Wright does is very interesting in this book is he actually goes through lots and lots and lots of the historical documents at the time and shows that actually there was no idea of the resurrection in the way that the Bible understands it. That was not an idea that was floating around in the contemporary society at all. So by implication, for the disciples to have written about it in the, you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John is very weird, because it's very strange. It's either fact or it's a very strange thing to make up. Because what they did is they were trying to persuade people that Jesus came back from the dead and that he's the king of the universe. And what they did is they made up a story that no one else in the society accepted, proposed that, and said, here's proof. Well, that's one option. Or they wrote what actually happened. And they wrote about the resurrection of Jesus in this such and such a way, with such and such events, because that's actually what happened, and they just recorded the facts. N.T. Wright, you can actually also see him on Google Videos. Just type in N.T. Wright in Google Video, and there's an hour and a half talk from him on Did Jesus Rise from the Dead? So if you don't want to read 400 pages, I've just made that video sound very appealing, haven't I? Anyway, that book, you know, you don't have to read the whole thing, but it's worth, when you hear that kind of challenge, you know, it's just a myth and the current myth at the time and everyone accepted it, it's just not true. I think, let me finish the talk with kind of raising this question. Why do I believe what I believe? See, I started today by asking the question about why do we do what we do? But I think the question behind that is, why do I believe what I believe? I think at the moment, the popular and consensus opinion is that Christianity is not true or has no relevance. In other words, Jesus' popularity rating has plummeted. Or maybe it was always low. But you know, either way, it's not a popular thing. But why do you believe what you believe? In other words, have we made our decision based on a poll sample? Are you a Christian? And is your poll sample 500 Christian friends on Facebook? And it's actually because they believe that you believe. Or are you someone who does not believe, and the reason you don't believe is because your poll sample is the 5,000 members of the Engineering Institute who don't believe, and therefore, how could you believe because they don't believe? Now, you might not. You might believe that Jesus has no relevance, and you might believe that he was not resurrected, but do you believe it because of the facts? Not just apart from the poll sample. Have you investigated the evidence, the historicity? Have you looked at the Bible, seen Jesus' words? Do they stack up about his life? Does the resurrection stand up to scrutiny? Have you rejected or accepted the Bible because you've actually read it? Or do you just believe because that's what everyone else believes? I think many, many people in Australia believe or disbelieve because it matters what other people think, as opposed to what we actually think.